He argued forcefully against those who invoked the wedding presents given by our Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam on the occasion of the wedding of his daughter in justification of the quite different dowry system prevailing in Ceylon. He condemned the feasts and functions connected with the dowry ceremony as hindrances to progress and promoters of impoverishment and ill health. He felt that tariqs intended to help the adherents in the path of spiritual development were being misused, were being aggressively exploited for partisan purposes and unspiritual practices. His reply to the inquisitive subscriber who inquired into the Sultan Abdul Hamid Khan's tariq is truly illuminating. He said, in civilized countries, the tariq of an individual was a secret between himself and his sheikh. Besides, the Sultan's tariq was not of particular significance. He pointed out that all who claimed to be sheikhs were not sufficiently advanced spiritually, and some of them in fact reminded him of a blind pilot in charge of a leaking vessel. Ota kapalukku kurutu malumi. He also dealt with the organizational aspect of Muslim society. In the columns of the Muslim Guardian, he strongly advocated the establishment of a Muslim Marka Parivalana Sabai consisting of representatives chosen by the Jamaats of every mosque in Ceylon. This representative council would in turn elect Qalis. Thus would the earlier Qali system be revived with modifications to suit current needs. With a view to the disappearance of conflicting fatwas which has promoted disharmony and disunity, which have proved the source of Balavidamana Kulapangal, he suggested the formation of an ulamakal in Sangam composed, say, of 20 alims and 10 educated non-alims. By this he felt that the fatwas of the description, Kitabhulil Ipudim Varudu, Apudim Varudu, and the Poli Niyayatod Palavidamana Fatwakal, such fatwas would then cease by the establishment of a body like the one he envisaged. The last paper he edited was Al Muslim, the Anglo-Tamil organ of Colombo Muslim Educational Society, in which appeared his comprehensive review of Muslim education past and present. He was a regular contributor to the English newspapers, which was so influential with the government. He wrote several articles on Muslim affairs, either explaining the Ceylon Muslim point of view on an important question or clearing some misunderstanding about their faith and practices. On occasions, he was compelled to write rejoinders. The most notable of them was his editorial notes appearing in the Muslim Guardian of December 1907 under the caption, "The Latest Critic of Islam." This referred to Sir Hugh Clifford's article in the Ceylon Independent containing remarks on the Holy Prophet of Islam. Abdul Aziz delivered many discourses on Islam. The one that received wide publicity in the local newspaper was on future life. Thus, he succeeded to a great extent in dissipating the misunderstandings prevailing about his faith and his people among many of the members of the educated elite of Ceylon. As a writer and author, his book on the ethnology of the Moors was his magnum opus. Its full title was a criticism of Mr. Ramanathan's ethnology of the Moors of Ceylon. To appreciate the book in proper perspective, we are compelled to go back to the year 1885. In that year and later, Siddilebe, in a series of articles appearing in his Muslim Nation, had dealt with the ancestry of the Ceylon Moors and proved that the Ceylon Moors were mainly the descendants of those Arabian colonists who settled in Ceylon many centuries ago. These articles were provoked by the remarks made by Ramanathan in the Legislative Council during the passage of the Mohammedan Registration Ordinance in 1885 to the effect that a vast majority of the Moors of Ceylon are a class of Tamils professing the Mohammedan faith, and that Sonagar meant Sunnite Muslims etymologically. Ramanathan elaborated these views in a paper he read before the Ceylon branch of the Royal Asiatic Society in 1888. Soon, the nationality of the Ceylon Moors became a polemical issue, charged with emotion on account of the Ceylon Moors then agitating for a separate nominated seat in the Legislative Council. On 9 September 1889, Abdul Aziz, with the nom de plume of a Moor, wrote a letter to the Times of Ceylon in which he referred to the erroneous remarks regarding Moor contained in the report of the Registrar General on the Vital Statistics of Ceylon for 1887. Quoting the testimony of Johnston and Tennant, Abdulaziz stated that the Moors were very old immigrants and the term Sonagar was derived from Sonagam, connoting the country of Arabia. He stressed that language alone could not settle the nationality, as otherwise the Dutch burghers would become Englishmen. The polemics should have ceased when in October 1889 a Mohammedan nominated seat was created, but the mistaken ideas regarding Ceylon Moors continued to persist in some circles. Evidence is furnished in the column of the Ceylon Standard of the 16th of April 1903. Abdulaziz felt that ad hoc articles and occasional rejoinders would not adequately dispel the misunderstandings regarding the Ceylon Moors. Therefore, he published his work in 1907. In this volume, we are able to discover in Abdulaziz all the virtues of a disciplined historian, though without the historian's resources and training. And on this occasion, it's our duty to remember his words and fulfill his desire. He says, "I have decided to leave to the future the writing of a comprehensive history of my race, explaining its manners, customs, habits and trade, and to content myself for the present with the writing of this criticism." If today no doubts are being entertained on the question of the nationality of the Ceylon Moors, a large measure of credit should definitely go to Abdulaziz. He was elected treasurer of the Maradana Mosque in June 1903 for a period of 5 years, proposed by Vapich Marika. This office gave Abdulaziz fresh opportunities for service. His friends discovered new talents in him and began to admire his administrative ability. His tenure was marked by efficient management of the mosque, its premises and property, its officials, finances and funds. His next election for a second term of 5 years was contested. The congregation was split into two warring parties. Colleagues became contenders and associates became antagonists. Friends became foes. Past hatreds were resurrected, new rivalries nurtured. This was a situation Abdulaziz could not have expected and yet could not escape. He was the victim of circumstances. He was compelled to go to the district court for possession. Costly litigation ensued and it took 3 long years to see the end of this litigation. This, however, did not fully restore the harmony that had prevailed previously. During the remaining 2 years of his stewardship, Abdulaziz tried his best to maintain his old standard of administration. Ladies and gentlemen, it is neither easy nor necessary at this distant date to praise or blame either of the two contending parties involved. That it was a tragedy, none could dispute, none could deny. And tragedy has been defined by a famous historian and philosopher as the conflict not of right with wrong, but of right with right. Right as conceived by each of the two contestants. We who now stand above the battle may well remember this aphorism and concentrate our thoughts on how adversely the community was affected by this tragedy. And one of the many casualties of this tragedy was the Muslim Guardian itself. Educational progress that had been achieved during the preceding 2 decades received a setback, and the talent and services of Abdulaziz could not be utilized to the maximum advantage of the community, which needed them so badly and so urgently. To this aspect of his public life, his biographical details lend full support. Now we see Abdulaziz as an agitator and doughty champion of his people's liberty in the first question. On 31st December 1905, a meeting was held on the Maradana Mosque grounds to protest against the order that had prevented the first Muslim advocate, Abdul Qadir, from appearing before the Supreme Court with his head covered. This prohibition had so poignantly aggrieved the community that there were present on this occasion over 30,000 men, all of them of one faith, though of different ethnological and economic groups. It was a mass meeting, a mammoth meeting, called by one of the newspapers as a monster meeting of the Mohammedans of Ceylon. Commenting editorially, the Ceylon Independent stated that the Mohammedans of Ceylon have again distinguished themselves by their spirit of confraternity, common sense, and determination to proceed in securing redress for their grievances on sound constitutional lines. The meeting was presided over by the Mohammedan member of the Legislative Council, the Honorable W.M. Abdul Rahman, and there were two principal speakers. One was Maulavi Rafiuddin Ahmad, a practicing barrister who had come all the way from Bombay to discuss a matter affecting not only the Mohammedan community of this country, but the Mohammedan confraternity throughout the world. The other speaker was Abdul Aziz. He followed Barrister Rafiuddin Ahmad. Abdul Aziz delivered an able address, forensically worthy of an accomplished advocate, long practiced in law and quite successful with both judge and jury. The first part of his speech, he gave a resume of the main facts of this vexatious question, which is now agitating the mind of every Ceylon Mohammedan in whom there is love of his own religion and custom. The person who directly suffered was M.C. Abdul Qadir, Ceylon's first Muslim graduate and the first Muslim advocate. Abdul Aziz felt that Abdul Qadir had brought honor to the community and his achievements were worthy of emulation. He was therefore congratulated in the columns of the Muslim Guardian and feted feelingly by the Moors Union. He was prevailed upon to prefer the metropolis of Colombo to the hometown of Jaffna as the place of practice. On the 7th of October 1904, he was sworn in wearing the dress of the Western Mohammedans, which included the fez. For 7 months, no objections had been taken to the fez. But on the 2nd of May 1905, the Chief Justice ordered him either to remove his fez or remove his shoes as a mark of respect. Either the head should be uncovered or the feet. Abdul Qadir felt that the dictates of duty demanded that he should show respect in his own style, following the traditions of his community, and that it would be wrong on his part to show respect in the way of the West. He chose to leave the court, explain his attitude to the chief in his chambers. His lordship was not convinced. 3 days later, Abdul Aziz alerted his community through the Muslim Guardian. To him, the fez incident was not a mere breeze between court and council. Rather, was it the thin end of the wedge. It could become a precedent to deprive them of their rights. Hence, the fez incident was not a mere affront to a much respected co-religionist. Instead, it was a challenge to the community. He next persuaded some of the prominent Muslims of Colombo to exert themselves on behalf of Abdul Qadir. A private deputation waited on the Chief Justice on the 7th of June 1905. It was felt that a petition by way of appeal from Abdul Qadir would bring results. Instead, it produced the Supreme Court minute of 19th September 1905, which only confirmed the proscription of the fez. Though this minute looks a logical handling of the subject, its arguments, when closely scrutinized, do not stand the test of reason. This was conclusively proved at this mass monster meeting by Abdul Aziz. It was generally agreed that though his speech was temperate in tone, the minute was subjected to relentless criticism and it was torn to shreds. The resolution moved by him was unanimously passed. Within a few weeks, the minute in question was superseded by another dated 16th March 1906. Advocate Abdul Qadir could thereafter appear in the Supreme Court wearing his fez and a long black coat usually worn by Muslims on ceremonial occasions. Thus was the fez restored to its rightful place and the honor of the community vindicated. Their religious and national rights and privileges were safeguarded. The fez question has since receded into history. The Muslims may or may not choose to exercise their right to the use of the fez in the courts or elsewhere. The fez by itself may no longer continue to possess the high status it had when it was the headdress of the once powerful Sultan of Turkey. The fez might have been repudiated in Turkey and abandoned in Egypt. Yet, the mass meeting held on the 31st of December 1905 has by no means lost its significance. This Abdul Aziz never failed to appreciate. In his Al-Muslim of 1909, he referred to this day of 31st December 1905 as a red letter day in the annals of the Ceylon Muslims, and a red letter day it remains. In that journal he pointed out that success could not have been achieved if the community did not at that time possess those few men who were both English educated and public spirited. In this assessment, Abdulaziz, with characteristic modesty, did not refer to himself or give even a hint of the glorious part he had played in the well-conducted agitation connected with the first question. Abdulaziz was indeed the promoter of this movement, which had far-reaching consequences in the political education and standing of his community. Abdulaziz it was who conceived the idea of giving this mass meeting an all-island complex. For this purpose, during the weeks preceding, 30 outstation meetings were organized and 99 delegates chosen. His was the initiative to invite Maulavi Rafiuddin Ahmad to participate in the mass meeting. It was undoubtedly a wise move, for his arrival and address indicated to the British government that the Fez question, in its wider implications, transcended the territorial limits of its premier crown colony of Ceylon. It is therefore, ladies and gentlemen, not surprising that the majority of his co-religionists and several of his contemporaries regarded Abdulaziz as a David bearing giant odds. Such was his intellectual ability, organizing capacity, and sagacious leadership, qualities abundantly revealed in his deeds and words before and after the mass meeting of 1905. To the Muslims of his generation, he was their hero. When he became the secretary of the Al-Jamiatul Islamiyah, Abdulaziz is a young man of just 21 years old. He had 27 more years to live. He died on the 11th of September 1915, having devoted all the 27 years of his adult life to the welfare of his people, whose social consciousness he roused. They had come to know their duties and learned to assert their rights. By his writings, he brought about a change in the attitude of his people towards education in general and towards English education in particular. Thus, he greatly contributed to the educational renaissance of the 20s. He was a trusted leader of the Muslims of Ceylon during the years preceding the Great World War. He was born on 27th of October 1867, and today, thanks to the Moors Islamic Cultural Home, we are fittingly celebrating the occasion by unveiling his portrait. It's our bounden duty to revere the name of I.L.M. Abdulaziz and pay heed to the words of wisdom he has left behind. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.